Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy, beautiful Thursday afternoon, folks. Boy, do we have a great show for you today. Tom Paul's with me in the 3 o'clock hour as a fabulous co-host. We've got Maggie and the Millionaires, of course, coming up at three. And then stick around because Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for the 8th Congressional District, will be talking to me this afternoon about what I'm just going to call those pesky double standards. Certainly seems to me like female candidates held to quite a different standard than men. I've also experienced that in my life as a lawyer. Yes. Curious if Kristen experienced it in her profession as well. We'll talk about all of that. But Tom, we've been talking about Eric Adams and whether or not elected officials, when they're indicted for crimes relating to their role as an elected official, whether yes. during their campaigns or in elected office, should resign. We got a couple of callers wanting to weigh in on this. Karina Perfect. From Milwaukee, always nice to hear from you. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Hello. Well, I have a question before I can educate other education person answer that. Would people like this have like vice presidents or something like that? Because we should think about a presumption of innocence. Otherwise, we have no democracy. We're going to just slide down into the Middle Ages and not to have, even though everybody, 99%, I'm sure they did it, but it should have a process to prove that he did it. And at the same time, then, okay, if he didn't do it, then he come back, and how are we going to do that? We already fired him once. We're going to rehire him. Wouldn't be better to have like a people who's the right hand vice president start doing it and wait until we have a result
Yeah, that's really interesting, Karina. Let me just quick take the first part, and then Tom, I'd love you to answer sort of her second portion of the question. First, Karina, most and I would believe almost all jurisdictions have an order of succession, meaning yes. if the chief elected officer, so a mayor, a governor, a president, a county executive, becomes incapacitated, resigns, or otherwise leaves office, or is impeached and removed, there is an order of succession. There's a person that is designated by typically the charters or constitutions of those jurisdictions to take over. But your point about the presumption of innocence, very important. We believe in due process here. And I think Tom and I, for the most part, are talking about, oh, gee, remember when things were normal and we could rely on grand juries and a legal process and investigators to act in an unbiased, objective, nonpartisan, apolitical way when investigating crimes. Karina, I share your concern. We only need to look back to the last Trump administration. There were a number of officials that, despite objections from White House counsel Don McGahn and others who tried to dissuade Trump from basically sicking the Federal Department of Justice on some of his enemies, he was able to do so anyways. And here's the important part, Karina. These people weren't elected officials. They were working within the governmental bureaucracy. And the four people, and maybe I'll do a whole show on these folks, the four people that were targeted by Trump and that eventually the DOJ went after, not a single one of them was ever convicted of anything that they were charged with in a couple instances. And in the other instances, there were no charges. So that's the concern. Tom, what do you say to Karina's points?
Yeah, I think, well, the distinction you made is very important, right? Is if there are no charges, it's a different subject. But I think the point you make is very relevant, that there needs to be a mechanism where it's a temporary step down until after some kind of trial. And that makes a lot of sense to me, that there would be some mechanism to say, all right, but you should step away from your official duties. You should step away from being able to wield power, so to speak, until that thing has been, whatever it's been, that's been handled in a way that creates a pathway for either that person to come back into office or be removed from office. But I agree with you, Maggie. There usually are succession plans in place, and there's ways to do that. But that's, I think it's an excellent point. I'm prone to think that if grand juries end up indicting, that there's probably something going on.
There's also this old line amongst especially DAs and federal prosecutors that you can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich, which makes the couple of people that Trump targeted for investigation by the DOJ that weren't ever indicted
right.
a very interesting
yes.
counterpoint there.
Right.
Mark from Prairie du Sac, what do you have to say this afternoon?
Yeah, since all our elected officials, you know, high and lower, are all required to take an oath of office, you know, swearing allegiance to the constitutions, including that of the United States, it gets to the point where I firmly believe that anybody who was in that kind of office, including probably a couple of our Supreme Court justices, were aware of the fake electors conspiracy that was going on, and that they should have denounced it. I mean, Ron Johnson should have denounced it rather than participating in it. You know, we got Tom Tiffany now complaining about. You know, some ballots that were sent out in duplicate and, you know, trying to make hay out of that. And I'd maintain that how many of our Wisconsin politicians were actually aware of the fake elector conspiracy, including Bob Spindell, who actually should not have been eligible to be a elector anyway because he holds a position of public trust, which I believe under trust or profit under the United States, which I believe under Article 2 of the Constitution that describes elector qualifications for electors, that if you hold a position of trust or public profit, that you aren't qualified.
You can't
to be an
elector. Be an
elector.
It's
yes.
a really all of this the particularities around who can be electors for the purposes of the Electoral College. Mark is a really interesting point. He's referring to the fact that Bob Spindell was on the Wisconsin Election Commission and was an elector and signed the fake elector thing. And by the way, Bob Spindell, still on the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
Yes.
Your thoughts?
Well, to start with, I think everyone involved, you know, they really were working, and Maggie, you and I have had this conversation, they were working against norms, not necessarily working against laws. And the hard part is trying to find the laws that they broke and then be able to indict them for those laws. Presenting a fake set of electors should be against the law any way you look at it, but it seems to be a fairly gray area. You know, but I know for certain that the guy I ran against last time for Congress in 2020, Scott Fitzgerald, reserved the room for the fake electors. He was part of it. And it's
facilitating
like
facilitating a conspiracy. Yes.
Right. And there's no mention of it. There's no, you know, and the fascinating thing about that whole thing is you will not see one elected official who was elected in 2020 say that their race was somehow impacted by this fraud. It was only at the highest level of the presidency. Every other race was absolutely fantastic. So,
well, and to close out this conversation, Tom, or this discussion, here's what. The idea that Karina and others have pointed out, maybe the nuanced view here, is if you're indicted, again, in a time and a place where we don't have a weaponized Department of Justice, right, where it's not politically motivated, it's not score settling, and that indictment relates to your duties or how you got into office, that there should be an expectation that someone steps back. And here's the thing that's always bugged me about Trump. If I were Donald Trump, if I were Eric Adams, if I were Mark Robinson, first of all, I never would have said or done any of these things, A, but B,
correct. Yes.
If I was genuinely believed in my innocence, I would be trying to put forward evidence of my innocence and I would be demanding the speediest trial you could think of.
Yes.
I would want the evidence against me to be brought into public light. I would want the public to see it. I would want to counter it. I would want to take the stand. And the fact that Donald Trump never pushed for that. Senator Menendez's scandal came out years
well after.
Right, January 6th and all of this stuff.
He's already been convicted.
Done. Yeah.
Right.
Out of office, trial done, spending
right.
some time
check.
In federal prison. Yeah,
right.
check. But the idea of a speedy trial
yes.
was created in our Constitution for precisely
yes.
this. This is the most extreme example, but I think it's an apt one.
Right. But it's also going back to, if you are innocent, you want a speedy trial so you can get back to your life and do what you believe is the right thing to do, right? But once again, that's what we're hearing across the board is people saying it's a weaponization of the justice system and they're going to delay, delay, delay.
Which is dumb, 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 and probably means you did it, did it, did it.
Yes, absolutely.
Turning the page, Tom, you and I stumbled upon a conversation that seems to be front and center, and I think seems to have, distracted some voters, and that is this idea of America First requiring an isolationist foreign policy stance. This Trump line about sort of withdrawing from NATO and pulling back from support for Ukraine. And you and I both receive the Substack that's called Letters from an American. It's written by historian Heather Cox Richardson, who, folks, she is the number one Substack in the world.
Yes.
She is going to be on my show tomorrow. Mark your calendars, Heather Cox Richardson, tomorrow on my show along with Senator Tammy Baldwin. Don't miss it. But we both read one of her recent pieces, and Tom, you wanted to share some thoughts and engage a conversation here.
Yeah, and it was great because this is the week that Joe Biden is in New York to address the UN and really talk about what it means to be a partner across the globe. You know, and we, as a society, we've moved from the industrial age to now we're entering the technological age. Mm-hmm. And what that means is there are more things that cross borders than used to be.
Right.
And, you know, in an agricultural age, there weren't too many things that crossed borders. You could keep everything within your own borders. But now trade crosses borders, climate crosses borders, people cross borders, money crosses borders, technology crosses borders. Like, you can do things from anywhere in the world to combat any other country on the planet. And this idea that there's this way for us to be able to pull back and say, let's just take care of our own and ignore the rest of the world, is part of the populism that Donald Trump is feeding people. And it sounds good. It sounds interesting. You know, but in Heather Cox Richardson's article, yes, it was 2 days ago, she basically said Biden was talking about the world, and he quoted Yeats saying, things fall apart, the center cannot hold, mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. And Biden had to remind people, in our time, the center has held. And what he means by that is the reasonable people across the world have come back together and said, wait a minute, there are things that are going to impact all of us if we don't work together. You know, that being Ukraine, that being what's going on in the Middle East right now. And it was Biden there to remind people to be optimistic that the center has held in times of crisis. And one of the reasons I really like Heather Cox Richardson, because she does a great job of putting things in a historical perspective. Usually what's going on has happened at some other point in the history of our country. And you don't have to look too far back. Right after World War One, you know, trying to get into World War One, there were a whole bunch of people in this country who were adamantly opposed to making that happen. But after that, it was after the World War, everybody wanted to go back to just being part of their own countries. And it wasn't surprising that anarchy reigned and Hitler came to power.
I'd like, Aaron, if we can we take sound cut number 2.4? This is right after Biden quoted Yeats and this concept of things falling apart and the center cannot hold and anarchy is loosed upon our world. Here's what President Biden had to say.
Our test is to make sure that the forces holding us together are stronger and those are pulling us apart.
And he goes on to say that the principles of partnership that we came here each year to uphold can withstand the challenges and that the center holds once again. He identified and acknowledged that there will always be forces that pull our countries apart and the world apart. Aggression, extremism, chaos, and cynicism, a desire to retreat from the world and go it alone. This is not medieval Europe, right? There aren't fiefdoms. We can't just look at what's internal and ignore the external because it comes for us all, right? More on this with my very special guest host in the 3 o'clock hour, Mr. Tom Paulswitz, two-time congressional candidate. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. What do you think of the threat of isolationism that Donald Trump is pitching to voters here on the Civic Media Radio Network?